Hi everyone, I am Charlotte. I'm a TMP mental performance coach and I work within our leader program. So these are the coaches and entrepreneurs that are making their first new hire and they're looking to scale the company and the business, but their mindset and emotion are getting in their way. And today this is my very first podcast. So I apologize if if you can feel that it is. And for my very first podcast, I was really, really excited. I'm really excited because I'm get to invite an incredible woman. Her name is Victoria. She's a holistic female health coach specializing her work in hormones, fertility, menstrual health, pelvic pathology, sensuality, and the divine feminine. She's a TEDx speaker and director. She's a public speaker educator as well. She's an ex-dancer and a stunt cheerleader, which reminds me, I still haven't asked her about that one. She's a national bikini athlete and first Grand Prix wellness athlete. She owned her own yoga studio, lingerie brand, and coaching business for 15 years. She's also a badass woman, a cosmic ray wonder to me, a leader, a positive disruptor of women's health provisions, healing, and happiness, and now as well, a wonderful friend and ally. Victoria, hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on. Can you introduce me like that wherever I go from now on,
please? Can you imagine? Do you have 5 minutes? 10 minutes, please.
Yeah,
it's really good to have you. Like I said, first podcast ever, so I'm really excited to have you here today. It was really lovely as well. Victoria just came for a couple of days in London, so we've been enjoying our time together, which is great, brainstorming and everything. So, yeah, tell me a little bit more about your... Obviously, I gave a little bit of a summary of your background, but what is your story? What got you to TMP in the first place?
So that's obviously the highlight reel, isn't it? And that's all the good stuff, but there's obviously a lot of more challenging, trickier stuff. And I was thinking about this earlier. The irony is, it's actually the good stuff that probably led me to TMP. Let me elaborate and explain. So because I'd always had like a really high standard for absolutely everything, so I started dancing when I was 3. So straight into a competitive environment. Context of dancing, obviously, very competitive, very much based on body image, aesthetics, sort of like the wrong values in hindsight, really. And I did that from a really young age. So that bar was set from the get-go.
Yeah.
And then I think progressively over time, my standard that I had for myself was perfect or nothing. Mm. It literally all or nothing mentality. Mm. And I think because I'd been doing that for so long, 3 decades of my life, I couldn't sustain it anymore. So, of course, at some point, everything started to just kind of crumble around me because I just couldn't maintain that standard anymore. I've set my bar so high, which is great and obviously amazing to be ambitious. But there was a caveat to that. And the caveat to that was burnout, physical health issues, mental health issues. So that was kind of, ironically, it was kind of the highlight reel that sort of led me there, I guess.
And it often is the case as well. You see it in a lot of our TMP clients as well. This is definitely like, especially in that industry, everything has to be perfect. You have to look perfect as well. And they come to us with this exactly it. Like, it's like, I can't sustain this anymore. It's impossible. It's like telling you, you know, we were talking about weight earlier, like during our walk. It's just like, it's that perfect goal weight.
It's perfect or failure, isn't it?
And it's just not sustainable. That's the problem, which makes it unperfect. It's not perfect because it's not sustainable. Because it leads you to that, to these like... terrible like mindset of failure, of not good enough, of all of these things. So what was the, when you came to see me, and I remember at the beginning, so like if you could summarize this in terms of what the beliefs that all of this, what were the beliefs that you had about yourself that were really present to you in that moment, whether they were or they were only after working a little bit together, what were the beliefs that you had?
So I think obviously, like I said before, they were the highlights and they were the almost like the good stuff, even though they came with their own sort of I don't mean negatives, but it came with its own stories around that. But of course there was also some really significant negatives in my background history story as well. And I think the beliefs that I'd got accumulatively from both the positives and the negatives were things like I wasn't good enough unless it was perfect. Mm-hmm. Although even when it was perfect, it still wasn't good enough. I think my beliefs, core beliefs really were I'm not capable, or it's not available to me, or maybe I, on paper, like literally listening to my list of achievements, on paper, I look like I'm absolutely smashing it, or everything's perfect, everything's sunshine and rainbows, but why do I still feel like shit? Like, why have I still got parts of myself or parts of my life that I don't feel are fulfilling, or I'm not content? So again, just reiterating the belief that I'm not good enough or I'm missing something. I think they were like my key ones. My mindset around money was huge.
Yeah,
I think coming from one of the poorest cities in the country, what I'm surrounded by on a daily basis, like the mentality that I grew up with, and just realizing how many of my beliefs, especially about money, so inherited, not my beliefs at all. And starting to work through that, I think they were probably the main ones.
Conditioning, isn't
conditioning
it? And just as a little like side note, the money, because we talk about the money issue, do you remember our last session? I think it was our last session. We worked on so many things together, worked on all these limiting beliefs and all of that, and you did so incredibly well. And I could see you just getting like more confident and all that, and the last little bit was the money issue, and I was like, so we worked on that, and I said to you, well, because your prices were, so Victoria does, just for the people who are listening right now, Victoria organizes incredible retreats of 1 to 3 days, depending on the retreat, around obviously meditation, women's health and all that. And she told me the price and I was like, no. It was like, wait, is that for 20 minutes? Or like, you kidding me? And so the condition was, I will come, because I really wanted to go. It sounded absolutely amazing. And I said to her, I was like, I will come to your retreat once you increase your prices. And she did. So I went. It's still not expensive enough.
Working on it.
Literally at the end of your retreat, I was like, yeah, you need to double your prices now. This is just ridiculous.
I don't know if that's a female thing as well, you know, like with the different contexts of education or different networks that I've been in, I have noticed that women seem to find it more challenging or more difficult to charge more than what their male counterparts do. I don't know if that's like a societal thing, or maybe it's not like a feminine trait. You shouldn't really ask to have more money, or you know, I think there's a lot. I think there's a lot there as well. Yeah,
it's not ladylike to.
It's not ladylike to be assertive and almost like a bit dominant. And
yeah, absolutely. There was this. I can't remember, and I need to really find the actual like numbers and stuff on that. But they were talking about, you know, when men versus women going into a job interview or going for a job, and it was like men would go in when they feel like they can do 20% of the job, even though like, so for a promotion
and still apply
for it. Apply for it, and women was no one quotes me on these numbers because I don't think they're correct, but I think women was like 80% or something like that, like something crazy. So we need to make we the value that we attach to our worth is so much lower than men. Like it's unbelievable, and it is all due to this contamination, conditioning, all the things that we're born into, and that we drag with us, right? And remember, we did a lot of work on your values together, what were important to you, and one of the key essential part of that work was to differentiate what are your actual values versus the one that you inherited, the one that you live by.
Yeah.
Because when we find that, and I find this with a lot with my clients, with most people I work with, is that when there is a feeling of anxiety or unhappiness or something is not right, it's because there's a dissonance, I don't know if that's a word. Dissonance between your value and your life, right? And the reason is because usually your values are unclear to you.
Yeah.
They are your values of your parents, they are your values of your society or whatever. And so part of the big work that we did together was that, right? Was to go back to the core of what is actually important to you.
Yeah, and it was incredibly scary because it was so unfamiliar. Like, oh, I'm 36 and it was like, wow, I don't actually know what are my values. What are mine and what have I inherited and what do I perceive as being a value just because I've been told that's what you should value. And again, I think that's really common. It's quite scary to get to a certain point where you think, I don't actually know what my values are. It's almost like a self-discovery or whatever. And the best way you explained it to me was the lobster analogy. Do you remember that one? you're like a lobster with its shell too tight. This is what you said to me.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
It stuck with me. So you're like a lobster that's shell. The shell is too tight. Yeah. And at the minute, you're really uncomfortable and you just need to find yourself a new shell. And yeah. I was like, wow, yeah, that's literally me right now. So, yeah, it was figuring out what do I actually value in life. And I had to be really uncomfortable in that process in figuring out what that was. It was really hard.
Yeah. And it did, sorry.
I was just going to say, because I think... Again, I can only share from a female perspective, but I think we're so ingrained to people please and to sacrifice our own needs, values to match somebody else's. Yeah. So I think this was my story anyway. I got so swept into pleasing so many different people as well. I had no idea who I even really, what my identity was, because I was split into 20 different versions of Victoria and none of them are actually reflective of who I
The great image I have around that was like you're born, you know, when you're young, you're like, you're so yourself, you just come as yourself, you have no inhibition, you are completely confident and brave and all that. I've got a 3-year-old at home and you couldn't find anything more confident than her, like it's unbelievable. And then you learn, you wear a suit, right? You start wearing a suit of to because you try, you test your parents, you test your teachers, you test all of that, and then you realize that, oh, some behaviors get me more love, some behaviors get me more attention. And so you wear all these suits that are incredibly uncomfortable.
Well, from like a personal level, we spoke about this last night, and I was saying to you, like, the work that we did on relationships for me and like patterns that I've repeated and not been able to understand, why am I repeating this pattern? And obviously from the work that we did together, I realized, because every single time I am morphing myself into an ideal of what I think suits another person. And I've done that for like 10 years. Yeah. And we were saying, weren't we, if you literally go through my last 10 years of my life, I physically, not even emotionally, mentally, life choices, jobs that I've chosen, physically, my body has morphed depending on who I've been people-pleasing at the time, or this almost like caricature or avatar version of myself that I've thought I've needed to be for somebody else, rather than actually establishing this is who I am and I'm not going to wear that suit anymore, or I'm not going to step into this different version of myself anymore. And I think it's actually really common. And I think until somebody highlights that to you of this is what you're doing, you're bending who you are to suit somebody else. Most people don't. I had no idea that's what I was doing. And I feel like I'm quite a self-aware person. But I was like, wow, I'm literally changing myself.
It's a very feminine thing as well. Like, I mean, I've seen this when I look at my clients. I've seen this in men, but I've seen this so much in women that come to see me and say, I don't know who I am anymore.
Yeah.
Just come to a point, like, I have no idea who I am.
And you don't even know how you've got there.
No. As well.
You know, like when you're driving and you're 10 minutes into your journey and you're like, how have I got here? It's the same thing, isn't it? It happens so progressively and I think so subtly over time that it's not until you get to like a drastic point where you're like, how have I actually got here? And you need a huge pattern disrupt to get you back on track to where you want to be.
And you mentioned earlier, I just wanted to circle back to that because it's so important. You mentioned the discomfort as well. Which is that. So there's this client of mine who said she'll recognize herself if she listens to this, because every time I'm like, thank you so much for telling me this because it's so good. She talked about the comfortable hell versus the uncomfortable heaven, which I think is incredible.
Yeah,
and it's going back to the analogy of the lobster, right? You need to. So the thing with the lobster is it's not my analogy. It's amazing. It's not my metaphor at all, but. It's the idea that the lobster grows into its shell, and then it becomes uncomfortable. And then what does the lobster do? It goes under a rock, and it's to protect himself from predators and stuff like that. It casts a shell, and then it grows another one. Now, if the lobster was, you know, could access Valium and doctors and stuff like that, it would just medicate itself and not feel the discomfort and wouldn't grow at any point, right? And this is not saying, by the way, that your medication is a bad idea, and also consistency, it really depends on the circumstance, but it's the idea that the discomfort is necessary to growth. Like it's that's when we know we're being uncomfortable with, and even when you think about. And we went through this together, and especially towards the end of the program, where I was like, you know, you were doing so incredibly well, and your old limiting beliefs and stuff barely showed up. But you remember I told you, I was like, when they do show up, that's discomfort, and that's good, because that means you're about to do something super cool here, right? You know, I know that personally, I had massive imposter syndrome, like through my, you know, my when I was working in a corporate world and all of that, and I know that it's still, even though I'm completely aware of it now, and I know that I'm good enough to do everything I do, but every time I'm on the verge of doing something really cool or a bit scary, I've got this like, you know, no, you can't do this. Like imposter syndrome just rushing back in. But you learn to treat it as a friend and as a like, oh, I recognize you.
Yeah.
Here you go. Here you are. It's okay. I'll do my thing anyway.
Can you remember me explaining to you about I see it now, how I see it now, I perceive it now is like it's a bouncer outside of the club.
Yeah, I remember the bouncer.
Yeah,
that was so good. Yeah, that was so good.
Yeah, I was like, I see it now. It's just a bouncer outside of the club, and he's just deciding who comes in and who doesn't. Yeah. And at the time, it's a little bit uncomfortable because you've got to confront a few people, but it's okay because he's just protecting what's inside.
Yeah, like. Absolutely. And that's what it is. Right? It's protection. It's just protection. It's just a misunderstanding in your head of it's usually a younger part of you, and you know we did that. We went back to your story, yeah. Younger part of yourself that somehow almost doesn't know that you've grown up, doesn't know that you can take care of yourself, doesn't know that you created that story based on something that happened a really long time ago. And that was so difficult at the time because it's trauma, right? And trauma, we say trauma can be written with a small T and with a capital T. It goes all the way from being made fun of by your friends and because you tripped in a schoolyard to abuse, neglect, all of these things. But for a child, it's not that much of a broad spectrum, actually. It's all pretty much the same thing. And so you live through something traumatizing for the body. And so your inner self, your inner child, is going to do everything it can to make sure you don't get into discomfort again by making it uncomfortable for you.
Mm.
So I always use the analogy now is like, it's almost like if it felt like your inner child felt like you were getting really close to like a cliff and he thinks, oh God, she's going to jump, she's going to die, which is the equivalent of, you know, she's going to do a retreat in front of 20 women and it's going to absolutely kill her to do public speaking in front of them. Well, he doesn't know that actually you're not about to jump off because you're going to kill yourself, you're about to jump off because you're going to do some cliff diving. It's exciting, it's fun, it's terrifying, but it's exciting. So your younger self is going to trip you over and over and over again and again and again to make sure you don't get to the end of it.
Yeah, so in yoga, we have like the way that I would explain this to my inner yoga class is finding the line between force and effort. So
I remember that during the retreat. Yeah. That was really good. I really enjoyed that. That's
yeah,
exactly
so and I use it, like I've learned so much about life from yoga, but finding the line between force and effort. So not pushing yourself to a point where the patterns, like I repeated, obviously burnout, complete exhaustion, but still being okay with sort of pushing yourself a little bit, but also then going onto the opposite side of the spectrum, actually putting some effort in as well. And I think most people find that quite hard to navigate. It's almost one or the other and nothing in between. Whereas actually it's just a line, little line and a little dance between one and another.
Absolutely.
So.
And we talked about this as well in when you're investing in yourself in terms of like programs and stuff like that. Do you remember we talked about that and for your pricing as well. And I was like, so I told you, it's like you need to have people committing to something, like people need to, and this is again this like when you think about when you invest in a program, when you invest in a coach, when you invest in anything that you do for your business, it's not about the price that you're paying, it's not about how good or bad they are, it's about how committed you are to this.
Yeah, and I think it's relative, not even just from like a sort of financial commitment, I think it's relative to anything. So like I have repeatedly thrown myself into things throughout my life that to other people they think, what are you doing, like why are you doing this? Oh, let's just apply for a TED talk and see what happens, like and then obviously once I was told I was going to be doing one, it was like, oh shit, I've actually got to do this now. And that sense of, oh my God, I have no idea what I'm doing, I've done it with business 1,000 times, let's just set up a random business. And that sense of urgency from being uncomfortable, I think, pushes you to step up a little bit, and that's okay. And I think it's learning that discomfort or even stress, like I think now especially with stress we almost treat it as something that's a problem that needs to be solved, and actually stress is very normal,
absolutely healthy. Peaks of stress, I always tell my clients, but peaks of stress throughout the day is completely necessary. We need that. It creates I can't remember exactly the terms. I think it creates obviously adrenaline in the body, which allows you to focus on things a bit better. It actually genuinely opens the your pupils to get more light in so that you can see better. It creates a sense of urgency, of focus, and all that. People can get really addicted to it. You know, like the people who are procrastinator, waiting until the last minute. What's it called? Last minute or deadline. I can't remember. There's a word for it. People who wait the last minute I can't remember what it's called. But anyway, so it's very important. It's very important to have peak of stress. The stress isn't a problem. It's the relationship that we have to stress. It's how we relate to our state of stress and what we think about it. So it's like if you think about having a moment of a little bit of panic because you know you've got a deadline. It can help you just focusing on something, getting this Instagram, reel out or something like that. But then it's everything that you had around you. So if you think about having like an email from your boss or something like that, or something, someone you work with, let's say like an email from like a client that is not happy about something, you feel a bit of stress, you feel a bit of like discomfort about it. You'll be like, okay, well, that grabs my attention. I need to do something about it. Now that's healthy, that's fine. That gets you to actually do something. The problem is the thinking that we have behind it. Oh my God, what does that mean? Is it because I'm not good enough? Like my service isn't good. Like all of this is creating what we call chronic stress at some point, and that's created that problem of sleeping and all of that thing. So yeah, stress is absolutely essential. It's really useful.
Which if I was talking to one of my clients, I'd be like, the first thing we need to do is manage your stress.
Exactly, and it doesn't even need to be managed. It needs to be, we talked about that yesterday as well, like managing emotions. We talked about managing our emotions all the time. Emotions don't need to be managed.
I think for some people, and like this was me included, yeah. that needed to be step one. Learning how to manage my emotions needed to be step one. Step two was learning that I didn't need to manage
them anymore. Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think it's almost like the alarm button. Like it's like, okay, let's just, and this is what we do, right? We go back to, okay, what made you feel that way for so long, right? And this is when we went back to the beliefs that you created. What is creating that constant feeling of stress? Because you were in fight, flight, or freeze nonstop when I first met you, right? It was like, it was this constant feeling of stress, which is obviously, that is incredibly bad for your health. So it's like, how do we stop that? And it was, that's what it is. Like that, in that sense, it was management, right?
Yeah.
How do we stop that? And then how do we get your understanding around that, around what your emotions are, what they're here for?
What are the stories that are attached to that? Because obviously the emotions are just completely normal. Emotions are just normal. But what were the stories
that we're telling ourselves?
Irrational stories. Like sometimes when I say them out loud now, they're almost funny. Like,
But they are.
Yeah.
Our mind is so incredibly powerful. Like I was saying, can you imagine this? 50,000 thoughts going through our mind every day. How crazy is that?
I bet mine's about 80,000. Mine's definitely more. 50,000 sounds like a chill day.
Do you know how many of them are negative? In average.
79,000.
70%.
Yeah.
That's a lot, right?
But your brain's wired for safety, isn't it? It's not wired for happiness. I think sometimes when people say things like happiness is a choice, and I think people think, well, it's easier to say that. It's easier to say that than actually live that. But it genuinely really is. And I think if you detach again the story from it, so the happiness is the choice because your brain's just not physiologically wired to choose happiness. Yeah. It's choosing safety. And a lot of the time, safety is the comfort, even if that's in shitty relationship, job with no money, house that's toxic, whatever, bad health behaviors. Your brain's going to help you choose that because it's comfortable. The unsafety is in the uncertainty, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think even just getting your head around that, like happiness actually genuinely is a choice. So what can I do that's going to keep me, or almost like train my brain to help me switch that default to some extent? Because obviously it's just normal to be on the negative bias. But what things can I do in my day that's going to help me keep choosing just even little just moments, joy for joy's sake? Like this is something I say to my clients all the time. What are you doing for just joy's sake? Where there's no agenda, there's no intention, it's not goal oriented. Because I was that person, very much so. And it's definitely something I still struggle with now. But what is actually in your week that is just joy for joy's sake?
Yeah, Yeah, I love that. And the more you pay attention to these things, the more they become available to you as well.
Yeah.
And it's not just about, and I just want to be very clear to people who listen here, like, I agree with everything that you just said, but it's also not just about being happy all the time. Because
Absolutely, that's not life.
And I always say this to my clients, I'm like, this is just not the kind of therapy that we're doing here, or the kind of coaching that we're doing here. You know, life sucks sometimes.
Yeah.
That's okay. And that's absolutely fine. Like,
I've forgotten the term. It's not toxic positivity, but it's
something like that. Toxic
like,
positivity.
Oh, you should just be positive. No. Actually, no, this is really shitty thing.
And also, have you noticed how if you're in a shit mood or if you're really angry and someone tells you, just be positive, does that work? Or does it make you more angry?
Yeah, and like, again, but just anger and sadness are just very normal emotions.
Yeah. But it's not going to work. Like, if you're not in control of your thoughts. You're not in control of your thoughts. Your thoughts are just, your mind creates constantly without you even noticing. So all you can do in these moments is sometimes, yeah, you can reframe, you can try to reframe and see, you know, see the positive in things. But there's also like the ultimate superpower in this is knowing that it's gonna pass. Like, you've got a built-in system inside of you that is here to manage your emotions.
And like, I get that completely, but I do think if you are literally in the depths of panic, anxiety, depression, and like I was in fight or flight 24/7, and I felt the word is literally desperate. I can't think of a better word. And being so stuck in that, up to the point that if you're feeling suicidal or it is like extreme, then sort of.
No, we're talking about like different person. I didn't mean when you were that far into.
So what I'm trying to say is, I think sometimes like I get completely that, yeah, eventually it will pass. But I think when you're in the depths of that, it's difficult to.
Oh, yeah,
just
it is.
Sit with
oh,
it.
Oh, but absolutely. It's simply because our thoughts are incredibly powerful. Our thoughts can make us see a world like that is completely, it's like, you know, I always say, like, thoughts are movie makers. And it is really, really believable in that moment that our safety is genuinely in danger, that we are not safe, because it feels that way, right? Now, I completely agree with you. It's not about saying, in the same way that you don't say to someone who is very angry, just think positively and they're going to think positively.
Calm down.
Just calm down. That's going to be fine. You also don't say to someone who is in the depth of depression, oh, but it's going to pass. You don't. Like, absolutely. But this is not, I mean more as a general idea of the way that where our experience is coming from. And when you start to understand that, at that level, then you can just slowly start to relax a little bit into it and take your emotions as they come and be okay with it, right? This is past when we are in the red zone of it's really difficult, right? We're talking about almost like towards the end of when we worked in together, it was more like towards the end of the program when you got like, we put the nervous system back to its normal, to a level almost as this sort of thing. And then.
Yeah. And I think just normalizing, everybody has good days and bad days.
Absolutely.
And that's just, it's
absolutely
cool.
Yeah. It's fine. And this is part of the work that we do as well. It's learning how to work with your biology, right? So there's a lot of things, and I worked on this with you. I work on this with a lot of clients. It's procrastination and being efficient and all that. And again, in this industry, there's a lot about like, you've got to do it, whatever, doesn't matter, just power through and get it done and all this. And fuck that.
Yeah, there's some days where that's not the answer.
That's
like,
not the
obviously
answer.
This is a lot of the work that I do around like feminine energy. So I've been in competing environments, been in business environments where the attitude has been all or nothing, like no excuses. At all costs, this gets done, X, Y, and Z, and that's just so unhealthy. Like, there are actually some days, especially as women, because we're so cyclical, there are some days where actually retreat, surrender, rest is
absolutely
the better option. And a lot of the people that I work with, it's undoing those patterns of behaviours, it's undoing those patterns of physiology where there hasn't been enough rest, there hasn't been enough pull back, it's just been push, especially for women, because they've been doing it for that long. And I think as women now, we're in such a interesting period of time because we've got all this pressure on us to still do predominantly most of the work at home. then obviously we've had women that have fought for our rights to be career women and have all equal rights to men. So we've got to make sure we uphold that as well. Then you've got to look perfect. You've got to be a perfect wife, perfect friend, perfect daughter.
Without making it look difficult or that we're making any effort.
Yeah, your house has got to look immaculate because everyone's got to show home on Instagram and it's too much. So the cost of that is women's health because especially like female sex hormones, they recover, they... so much better nourished with rest. Like, we need the rest. There's so much stress. So, in simple terms, we call it yin and yang in what I do. And it's so heavy on the yang side, which is the masculine side, that the yin side's just completely depleted. Mm-hmm. So I think getting women away from that mentality, especially like it's not doesn't have to be all or nothing. There are days where nothing is just what's required and normal, and it's the balance. It's not... you have to achieve this or you have to get to this goal, and it doesn't matter what the cost is. Like, with my last coaching business, I was miserable. Like, financial targets, absolutely smashing it, abundance of money in that respect, sales amazing, all that side of stuff. Health-wise, shit. Mm-mm-mm. Self-esteem, shit. Rest, quality of life, all shit. So job fulfillment. Yeah. I was literally in a position where I just hated what I was doing. And I just thought, what am I doing? Yeah. What am I doing this for? Because I'm following this mentality of you must do this at all costs. Yeah. And it's not the answer.
Yeah. And you touched on comparison as well. And it's really interesting you mentioned that, because it's when you think about the reason why we compare ourselves to others, it's an evolutionary trick, right? So when you think about when we are babies or toddlers or something, we compare ourselves to be able to learn how to walk or to talk. That's how we learn. And then as an adult, like if you look back 10,000 years ago, where even like in tribes and stuff, it's about learning, learning skills, learning how to hunt, learning how to all of these things, and to know how to be part of a group of the tribe and all that. It's something that's completely natural to us to compare ourselves. It's completely healthy and we need it. But the problem is, since the Industrial Revolution, which is like in the 1700, the technology that we've been dealing with basically has evolved so quickly that our brain and our physiology hasn't had time to catch up, and so now we are still armed with this ability to compare ourselves, which is supposed to be here to help us evolve and grow, but we have never been more exposed to other people's lives, not only to other people's lives, but to the perfect side of it, which is completely fake, right, with Instagram and all these things. So it's constantly triggering that comparison thing, which is just here to help us and is going working against us, unfortunately. And so we find ourselves creating a lot of anxiety, depression, and all these things. So it is difficult.
Yeah.
So basically, you've come a really long way. Really long way. And if you could paint a picture of the contrast you've experienced, right? The person you were then versus the person you are now, like summarizing it a little bit, how would you paint that picture?
So I think most people think in pictures, but visually my brain, it's quite funny actually. It's all around like actually being able to charge my worth and feeling like, I'm worth that. And not being scared of that or feeling like, like the resistance that was there. Like, I think when you said to me that day, I'll come to your retreat if you put your prices up. Oh my God, the feeling in my, you know, when you get to the top of a roller coaster and your belly's like, ooh. It was literally, I was like, no, I can't do that. And I thought, you're going to have to just do it anyway. But I think that was the biggest difference for me. And I think also from like a personal side of stuff, I was going to say completely different, but it's not. It's just, I think it was just recognizing what my value, what my worth was, and just leading with that rather than feeling like, oh, I didn't ask for anything, or I think that was probably.
And
the
I've
big
seen
thing
it
for me.
So much as well. Like it was, it was so night and day as well. It was like I remember you sending me this voice and it was like, you're gonna be so proud of me, and then I was like, what?
And it was really tiny stuff, wasn't it? It was
but
really
huge.
Small stuff.
But this is where you see the big progress.
Yes, I think changes in the subtle things, but then obviously the impact that would have on my life overall. And I said this to you last night. The business that I have now, my beautiful Rebirth brand, I've been sitting on that for nearly 2.5 years. Literally sitting on it. I started that, I was on I was actually on a cruise ship with my friend Heather, and we were talking about it then, and that was like 2.5 years ago, and nothing's changed really. The context of what I want to deliver, even the content, the framework, everything is the same. The difference is me.
You.
Yeah. And how I've shown up what sort of energy I'm in now. So I think just massive life choices. Obviously, I moved out of my house as well, didn't I? That was a big one. Because I just felt like the energy of that house was just not for me anymore. It was bringing me down and just didn't feel like I belonged there anymore. Lots of big decisions, life decisions.
And I remember that in terms of, that was actually quite telling as well, like when you think about the beginning versus the end of the program working together, the first retreat, when I first saw you, one of the first, the first retreat that you hosted, and you were like...
I'll tell that story.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't believe I did another one after that. So the first retreat that I did, obviously it was so alien to me, but like I said earlier, always in for throwing myself into something that's out of my comfort zone because I know in the process somehow I'm going to level up in some capacity. So planned my first retreat. I put so much thought into it, like way too much really. Like it was excessive. The amount of planning that I did down to every single word, I memorized it. I knew that retreat inside out and I was so nervous because it was my first one. It was a full day. I'd never done anything for that long. Yeah. I was completely out of my comfort zone, so I thought people are either going to absolutely love this or they're going to think it's weird as shit and they're going to hate it, but just went with it anyway. Anyway, it went, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And I know in hindsight, my girls had no idea. Like when I've spoken to them after, they're like, what? It was amazing. Like they loved it. And when I've asked them, which has been your favourite retreat? So some of them that have done them all, they all say that one, which is hilarious to me.
It shows how badly, how we don't know how to judge ourselves or our work.
But the day, I have never experienced stress in the moment like that. And there were so many moments where I just wanted to pick my stuff up and just walk off and be like, I'm just going to walk off. And that literal fight or flight was with me all day. There was just so much that wasn't done that kind of like wasn't set as my responsibility to be done. It was just from my perspective an absolute disaster, and I was heartbroken because I'd obviously put so much into it. I'd built it to be this huge thing. That was obviously where the trajectory of where I wanted to take my business, and I thought no one's ever going to come back to this. And every single person instantly was like, when is the next one?
Just for a side note here, Victoria's retreats get booked in within, it's like a festival,
3 hours,
and like it's like buying tickets to a festival. Like it's crazy, they get booked so quickly. When I wanted to join, I sent you 4 or 5 messages within a few months saying, please don't forget to tell me when I can join. Like it's mental,
they sell out in 3 hours. It's crazy. But after it, so I went straight to Northumberland with my family, and that was when we had our call after it. And we didn't do the call. I don't know if you can remember.
Yeah,
we did about 10 minutes, and were just like, this is not the time. Like,
you were not in the right space.
I was not in the right headspace at all. I was devastated. Yeah. I was heartbroken.
Just to be clear, it's not because she was devastated that I didn't want to do the call. it's not like, oh, that doesn't feel right. That just like, let's talk another time when you feel happier.
In the right space.
No, you were not in the right, literally physical space either.
No,
you couldn't talk. You couldn't talk because there was people around and stuff. Just to be very clear here.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh well.
Yeah.
I'll deal with you another day when you're in a better mood.
No, I physically wasn't in the right space, like the right environment to have a call, and like the Wi-Fi wasn't very good and all that sort of thing. And when I spoke to you that day, I don't know if you can remember me saying this, but I said to you, I am never doing this ever again. Not doing this again. Mm-hmm. It's not worth the stress. Mm-mm. I cried for like 3 days straight because I was so gutted at just how it had gone. And then I started to get feedback from people that had been, and it was like, Vic, this day's changed my life. This is the best day I've ever had. I've learned things about myself I didn't even know. And I was reading all these testimonials thinking, have I experienced something completely different here? And then I thought, right, please hook up. You're doing it again. And we're just going to see what happens. So then I started planning the next one, which was my autumn retreat. And as soon as I posted, like spaces were available, booking link is live. It sold out
straight away.
I think that one sold out within about 6 hours. It was just crazy.
Yeah.
So
well, this is the way back to that. You know, this is where your experience is not coming from. It's not coming from their circumstances. It's coming from your thoughts.
It's coming from me.
It's coming from you. And yeah. I would say, like, it's not about what your look. It's always about the glasses that you're wearing, not what you're looking at. It's the glasses that you're wearing to look at that thing. Like, it's in this moment, your insecurities, your worth, you know, self-worth and all that is getting in the way to see things as they actually were. And it doesn't mean that it wasn't challenging. It doesn't mean that it wasn't challenging. Like, but what I want to point to as well is the last retreat, so the one that I went to, well, there was quite a few things that didn't go your way. There was quite a few things that didn't work out. You wanted
just,
to do a
just
wall.
Just on a tangent, it was still awesome.
It was, but that's it. But that's it. It was amazing, right?
Yeah,
it was amazing. Yeah. But what I mean is, your glasses are changed. Your glasses have changed. So the way that you handled it was incredibly. You were relaxed. You took like control. You were there with authority. There was loads of little different things, like people talking sometimes and stuff, and you were calm everybody down, and you got everybody's attention, and you were like, and all of these things. And I told you, do you remember? I don't know if you remember, but at the end I was like, can you imagine if you could just go back in time right now, and live that first retreat again with the glasses that you wear now, with the beliefs that you have in you now. And you said to me, you remember, you were like, yeah, probably it would have probably been a completely different experience.
Yeah, 100%. And like, sort of circling back to the question was what's the biggest change? I think it's my own self-compassion and actually learning to be compassionate with myself. And sometimes shit doesn't go to plan and that's okay. And I don't need to be perfect all the time. No. And I think it was my autumn retreat. We did an ending intentional statement, and everybody in the room did it. It was really emotional, and then everybody got to me and they were like, right, come on then, Vic, what's yours? And I said out loud to everybody, I don't need to be fucking perfect all the time, excuse my language. And that was mine, and I think that was the transformation for me, actually being a bit more compassionate and just treating myself exactly how I treat everybody else. And knowing that mistakes are actually really cool. And when things don't go to plan, great, you've learned a new skill on how to manage stress and how to handle things in the moment and how to adapt and how to change course, depending on obviously what you're doing. Time management, like, you know, there's so many different things that I've been able to learn just from being more self-compassionate. So I think sort of going back to what you were asking me, what was the biggest transformation or what has been the biggest transformation from start to finish is learning to approach myself with the same softness, acceptance, forgiveness, and the same humility that most of us treat everybody else with, but we've just sort of disconnected from the ability to do that for ourselves. So that was my biggest.
Wonderful. And that frees so much more space in your mind when you're not spending all that time and energy, you know, belittling yourself, wondering what went wrong and all that, to actually move forward and get to the next step and look at where you are now. Like, you're so much farther along in your journey with your program and with all of this. And by the way, just tell us a bit more about that program. What
my
is
rebirth
that
program. Your rebirth program? My beautiful rebirth program. So how that's sort of grown, how it's bloomed into life. Rebirth is all about helping women in a holistic way. So either through yoga, Ayurvedic medicine, nutrition, so many different things, and dealing with hormonal difficulties, women that have got hormonal instability, which is pretty much
everybody.
pelvic pathology, so dealing with endometriosis, adenomyosis, PCOS, fertility, which is sort of where I would say I'm the most aligned with, or I love to work with the most, fertility, and just anything in that realm, helping women deal with those things that are under-researched, under-educated, not talked about, all feel like we're struggling with in isolation when it's all of us collectively. And just working with women, coaching.
That's amazing.
Based in that realm.
That's so amazing. And so what if I were interested in doing this, like, or in joining this, or in subscribing or whatever, what would I need to do?
So Instagram's probably the best place to find me. So just following me on Instagram.
So what's your Instagram?
Rebirth with Victoria.
Rebirth with Victoria.
Rebirth with Victoria. And then, of course, continuing the retreats, because they're such beautiful experiences. So they're every quarter. So we release them. Obviously, you've got to be quick.
Got to be very quick, guys. Super quick.
Quick to book them. And then our next intake for my rebirth program is probably going to be the summer.
Nice.
So working
Can't
with women.
Wait.
Yeah, working
I'm going.
With women one-to-one. Yeah. just all these things that are just so taboo that we still don't talk about, which blows my mind. But I think from my own personal experiences, I've been so accustomed to having to talk about things that probably most women find uncomfortable to talk about, or it's very normalized to me because I'm engaging with it all the time. But just talking about really taboo things, like even down to female sensuality and that realm, like, it's such an untapped topic of conversation. And why?
And you're creating such a beautiful safe space for this as well. It's, it's really, really amazing. Really, really great to be part of it. So what would you say to someone who's on the fence about signing up for TMP?
To somebody who's on the fence about signing up for TMP, I think being open-minded and actually accepting that you'll always go further if you've got somebody to take you or stand side by side with you. Like, I'm very much I can do it on my own, or I was very much I can do this by myself. I don't need anybody else. And actually letting that part of your ego go and accepting that sometimes you need somebody else just to guide you a little bit. So I think that's what I would say. Don't be scared to let somebody else stand next to you.
Absolutely. And if you could summarize working with TMP in three words, what would that be? Three words be?
I'm
putting you on the spot here.
Three words.
Come on, don't think about it too much.
Three words. Summarize working with TMP in three words. You're going to tell me off, but friendship is my first one, because that's the most significant thing. It's such a beautiful thing that I've taken from that. Obviously, our connection and the bond that we've got. I think insight as well, insights into my own beliefs, ways of thinking that I just would not have been able to get by myself. And I don't want to be I was going to say growth, but I feel like that's just like a...
That's okay. Yeah, if that's what we want to say. I mean, growth is...
I think growth, just, growing as a person. Always evolving, always growing.
Absolutely. And I love you just mentioned insight, and that's such a great thing. And I just want to pick up on that one very specifically, because this is what it's all about. TMP and like the way that we work as well with our clients isn't about, obviously, we shower you with information sometimes and education and all of that. But this is as efficient, if there's no insight, it's as efficient as trying to feed someone by taping sandwiches to their body, right? It doesn't, if it doesn't get in, it doesn't get in, right? It's not, it's about creating the safe space and with love, with comfort, with compassion to help you through the problem that you have, to get you to get these insights, because these are never going to leave you, right? You feel like they're with you forever.
I think it's having somebody else as well. Like, if with all the problems that we have, all the puzzles that we have individually, it's getting somebody else to go, well, have you looked at it like this? Like, that's what it was for me. Like, I'd obviously was so stuck in my own repeated ways of thinking that it took for you to stand on the outside of it and go, come and look at it from this side, and you're going to see it. You're going to see it in a completely different way. So I think, like, puzzle solving. Let's put puzzle solving in. I'm having four.
Like, love it. Perfect. Never do anything like everybody else. I love it. And, last one. Just, is there anything you would like to say to the TMP team?
Oh, to the TMP team, thank you so much, Kieran, for coming into my life. I was telling you earlier, wasn't I, how me and Kieran connected, and it was such a sort of random way that we connected. But I think just from that, it was from me, I'll explain. So I was on a group call, an educational thing that was happening every quarter, and Kieran had written something in the chat. I didn't know Kieran, I didn't know who he was, I didn't know what he did, and I just commented on something he'd said. Then he'd replied saying, I was actually going to message you today to come on the podcast. Obviously, I've done a podcast with Kieran before. And then I think just from me being brave and asking a question, asking a complete stranger, hey, I really want to ask you a question about that thing you just said, like being open to just connecting with people. So I think to Kieran, I'd just say thank you so much for embracing me exactly as I am. And he was there for me in moments where I had nobody else to go to. Huge life decision that I went to Kieran with, and I wasn't working with him at the time. And the compassion that he had for me, the time that he put aside for me, is a significant moment. He helped me make a decision that was going to change the trajectory of my entire life, depending on which way I went with it. So just, I think, thank you for being you, Kieran.
Aww.
And then, of course, to you.
Yeah.
To a lifelong friendship and many more adventures
from here.
Yeah.
I know. This is amazing. Yeah. Gained so much more than just a client with all this. It was great. It was beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much, Vic. It was so nice to have you on my first ever podcast. We did pretty well, I think.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Thank you so much for having me.
And so speak later.